you know, my exit from the W-2 world wasn't under ideal circumstances. I wouldn't say that I regret it, because if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have 2 books. I wouldn't have a business for 9+ years and all of the businesses that I supported. So that unpleasant circumstance ultimately exposed me to so much more that I can pursue and experience in the world. So no regrets whatsoever.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Lounge. If you're looking for flexible ways to earn income, grow your mindset, and live the lifestyle you've always dreamed of, you're in the right place. So lower the lights, grab your favorite beverage, and join your host, founder of NotaryCoach.com and Amazon best-selling author of Sign and Thrive, How to Make 6 Figures as a Mobile Notary and Loan Signing Agent, Bill Soroka.
All right, cheers, and welcome to my guest today, LaTanya, or LD Howard. LD, thank you so much for joining me on the Side Hustle Lounge podcast today.
Thank you for having me, Bill. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. I'm excited.
Likewise. I've been looking forward to our conversation since you were one of the first people I asked to be on the podcast, and then just the series of life events. Now we're finally getting to this conversation. And the reason I've been looking forward to it is, you know, when you and I connected over Service Office Space and your book, Kill the Rent, Grow Your Biz, you know, we immediately connected over our passion for personal development, growth, and this commitment to learning and constant growth. So I know we're going to have an awesome conversation today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's been, you and I first met, I think, through the school that we were in for writing a book, right? And when was that? That was 2018, 2017, maybe? Because I 2018, so it must have been 2017. So, wow, it's been some years.
4 years, yeah. So,
that just kind of registered in my brain that I've known Bill Soroka for almost 5 years now.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I didn't even put that together either. That was the self-publishing school with Chandler Bolt. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, I'm going to interview Chandler soon on this podcast.
Nice. Okay.
That course, that program changed my life whenever I launched my Sign and Thrive book. I know it did the same for you too.
Absolutely.
In fact, you are a best-selling author. You're an educator and you're an entrepreneur.
I am.
Fellow entrepreneur.
There are a lot of things I've been calling in my life, Bill, but I really like those three the most.
those are great things to be called. Tell me how that originated. What came first, educator, author, or entrepreneur?
You know, that's really interesting, a very interesting question, because I think at this point in my life, when I reflect backwards on different experiences that I've had, I would have to say that educator is probably the thing that came first. And I was probably educating people or had an interest in educating people before I knew what that was. Even when I was in school, you know, whether it be grade school, high school, whatever the case may be, I've just always naturally sought to share what I knew with other people so that they could have the power to do for themselves as well. So I've always kind of had that innate interest, but it wasn't until I became an adult that I really realized, oh, that's what I really enjoy doing. So I would say that just part of my makeup is that I'm an educator in that regard. And the second thing happened, of the three things that happened, I would say would be entrepreneur. And that came really accidentally 2 times in my life. In my former life, as I like to say, in my W-2 life, I worked with the government in budgeting and financial management. And there was an opportunity where I was actually applying for a job. I did not get the job, but they liked me so much that they offered me an opportunity to come in as a contractor. So that was my first exposure to entrepreneurship. And then some years later, after 9/11, I had the opportunity, after doing some soul searching, to open up Howard Corporate Center, which is the shared workspace business that I've been operating for 9 years now, 9+ years. And then out of that came the authorship. So I guess, again, to sequence it, I would say the educator, the entrepreneur, and then the author. But it just flows better to say, you know, author, educator, entrepreneur. Sometimes you have to tweak, but the sentiment is still there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and the to be an author, a publisher, especially a best-selling, is it's an amazing feat. Like, less than 1% of people in the world do that. And I understand, and you probably understand too, after doing it, why people don't do it.
Exactly.
Because it's not just writing a bunch of words and publishing it out. You got to, I mean, well, maybe I'll speak for me, but for you, did you experience the, like, every demon you've ever had in your life come out as you're writing that book, every insecurity come out as you're writing your book, or was it?
You know, Bill, I have to say, not really, because going back to my point about I just had this innate interest in sharing knowledge. I found joy in that part of it. And the SPS self-publishing school that we went through helped me to get my time management and framing the book in a way that it could be something that's useful to an audience. But actually going through the process of writing the book and putting pen to paper, the things that I knew about the service office space, I actually found joy in that. If there was any angst that I had, it was the marketing piece, because I say to people, marketing is just not my strong suit. We all have things that we're good at. We all have things that we're not so good at. Marketing is probably the thing that I'm not as good at as some other things. So that's always been a bit of a challenge area. So that's why I like opportunities like this one that you are providing, just to share with people the book and really my journey. Because I think for me, and you can let me know if this is the case for you too, I tend to connect more with a book when I know the story behind why the book was written. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So just having an opportunity to share with people how it is I became an entrepreneur, why it was important for me to share the information about the service office space industry, that's what I really enjoy. And that kind of helps me to market the book a little bit more and get over any discomfort I have around marketing.
Yeah. Well, I hear that a lot too. Mm-hmm. And that's the interesting challenge about a book. You go through the actual process of writing it.
Right.
And you think, all right, I'm hit publish. It's all done, right?
Right.
That's really just the beginning. That's
beginning, absolutely.
You got to get the word of the book out there and let people right. know that it exists.
Yeah. And I just want to say congratulations to you for the success of your book. I'm just so proud and so happy and so excited for you. I think you still do have the orange banner, but it at least had it for several years, right? Really since its inception. And that's exciting for you, Bill.
It is. It blew my mind out. Yeah. It's been a bestseller since it shouldn't have,
Bill. You work so hard. You work so hard and you help so many people. You deserve every minute that book was a bestseller. I mean, it still is, but all the excitement around it and the wonderful reviews, I mean, you deserve it all. And I wish more for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Now, let's talk about that, though. So it sounds like, well, tell me, how long did it take you to write your book?
It probably took me the 90 days that SPS promises. Because for me, I was really, I don't want to say the book was a brain dump, you know, but I was really just writing what I already knew from my experience. Of course, I took some time to research some of the statistics and some of the other data that I have in the book, because I wanted it to be resourceful in that way. Certainly, I'm sharing my experiences and my opinion as a provider, but there's some empirical evidence that I think is important for people to have so they can make their own decisions. But for me, I was really just organizing what I already knew into a format that could be useful for other people. What allowed me, I think, to do it in 90 days was really the focus that being a part of SPS and having the accountability and connecting with folks like you to stay motivated on track. That's what made it possible for me not to just drag it on longer than than the 90-day period. But otherwise, it was relatively easy for me to do it.
Nice. So I don't even know what to say here, LB.
Experience.
So I always make jokes about it with Chandler and the team over there too, because they have this 90-day write a book in 90 days thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I signed up. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to knock this out. But guess how long it took me to write mine?
It took you longer than 90 days. I remember that part. I think it took
me 3 years. It took me 3 years.
Yeah.
Because all my demons about time management,
right, you know, right,
sitting down to write, and I made the mistake of editing while I was writing. It was a whole thing, you
right,
know, and going yeah, through it. And I always make jokes because I'm definitely not the token example of how that program works, but I stuck with it for 3 years and finally published it.
But the results were there. The results were there for you.
Yeah. You know what I love about your book and when you get results like both of us have had with the bestsellers and you get the great reviews, the key to that, to me, I believe, is providing value.
Exactly.
And that's what you talk about. In your book, I've read your book. I love your book, both of them.
Thank you.
After
COVID-19.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You just give people the information that they need. You don't hold things back. And I think consumers, readers, students, everybody's sick of being teased. They're sick of brochures that just tease them into buying a course or something down the road. They just want value.
Right.
They want to get the goods. Right. And I think that's for both of our books, we do that.
Yeah.
In there. But that's what I want to talk about, because we're going to talk about all kinds of things today. But since we're on this topic, I like the order that you did things. You were an educator first. And honestly, I believe that the best way to learn is to teach. So you
That is absolutely right.
You learned tons of stuff as you were going through. Then you became an entrepreneur. You spent years building your serviced office space and the brand and the services that are in there. And then you wrote a book. So to me, that's, you figured out how to nail it first and then you scaled it and you scaled it with your book.
I like that. Nail it, then scale it.
Huh? Nail it and scale it. I'm loving it too. And I think a lot of times,
write that down, Bill.
We're in this weird expert world, right? Where, and I get it. And I think there's a lot of value because we all have more expertise than we realize. But I think sometimes it's made to look too easy and we forget the nail it part. So you get people who come in, they're like, oh yeah, I'm this. Now I'm going to write a book and I'm an expert and I've got an online course, but they haven't really got to the meat of things. And it sounds to me, and I've seen it, that you've got to the meat of things. You know your stuff in this industry, the service office space.
I would say that in 9+ years of being a service office space owner, I opened in 2012. I've had the opportunity to learn a lot. I had a very steep learning curve at the beginning. Okay. Because like I said, my background is as a governmental budget manager, financial professional. That's what I went to school for. That's where I spent the first half of my life, if you will, thus far. So the idea of entrepreneurship and the entrepreneurial mindset is something I did not understand. And it's something that I had to quickly begin to understand and that I'm still learning. Fortunately, I think what has enabled me to sustain as long as I have is because I'm type A. And I'm very analytical. And because of the type of work that I've done in the past, I tend to look at things as projects. So I looked at the business as a project. Okay, this is a new project that I'm taking on. So a lot of the nuances that come into play when you're starting the business, you know, organizing your accounting, for example, to organizing your price list, to figuring out the types of different promotions and incentives you're going to offer. To me, that was a project management mentality that I was able to maneuver relatively easily, even though it was a new industry for me to be in. What I had a steeper thing to learn and what I continue to learn are the softer things like the marketing, like the sales. One of the books that I enjoy reading, you know, I know you and I are book nerds, is E Myth. I know no one can see this, but even if the E-Myth Revisited, and I can see it, and that's what's most important. But the E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber, and this is what many people regard as the small business Bible. There are many other good small business books out there, but one of the things that he talks about is the different psychology that comes into play when it comes to sales and marketing and getting people to buy from you. He talks in here, for example, about how if you wear a blue suit versus a brown suit, you have a greater likelihood of closing the deal, and how you position your words when you're prospecting or engaging with a customer, even in the most subtle way, can make the difference between whether that person buys with you or not. Those are the types of things that I did not know, and I am continuing to learn. So some parts of it I had nailed. Some stuff I still am drilling, trying to figure out how to drill the hole to get the nail in there. So, and that's going to be an ongoing thing. And even though that can be scary and frustrating at times, it's also kind of fun because you always have something to look forward to from a learning perspective. And I enjoy that after the learning has occurred. It's frustrating me while I'm on the path, but once I get there, I can reflect back on it and be excited about it.
How do you keep that enthusiasm or interest or curiosity, whatever it is, to keep going when you are frustrated? Like, how do you know when to hire it out, just hire somebody else to do it, or say, no, I'm going to learn how to do this?
You know, I think in business, there comes a point where you just maybe get mentally exhausted and frustrated, or you decide that, look, I really need to focus on some other things. And I'm at a point now where I just can't continue beating this dead horse, so to speak. For me, for example, I've been a staff of one for most of the 9 years that I've been in business, because my location is considered to be a micro center. Many of my competitors may have a whole floor, or some even have a whole building. I have a portion of a floor within a building. So in that regard, I'm not as large from a footprint perspective as many people. So there hasn't been as much of a need to have multiple staff. But having said that, for many of the 9 years, I've been basically running everything myself. I've hired some support every now and then. I actually have someone who's been with me for about 3 months now. When I first started, that was intentional because I wanted to understand the weeds first, so that I knew how to effectively delegate it and monitor it when other people got involved. But that got old probably around 2018 when I wrote the book. And this was after realizing that I had a creative side. That's one of the things, one of the many things I enjoy about entrepreneurship, is that it exposes other things about yourself that you may not have otherwise known. Yeah. But around 2018, that's when I really began to tap into my creative side and wrote the book. And then from there, I began exploring and am still exploring other creative outlets, such as a course, which I'm going to tap into your knowledge base for, and some other types of projects. So even though marketing is, for example, not my strong suit, and I've tried to become better at it, I'm at a point now where I have to outsource that because I want to focus my efforts more on these creative projects. I want to focus my efforts more on the things that really feed my soul. And all of this feeds my soul, but it excites me in a different way to do more creative things. So I've reached that point where I said, look, in order for me to do these things that bring me a little bit more joy and a little bit more excitement, I'm going to need to outsource and get more support on these other types of things that are equally important, but I just would rather direct my energy to these other types of things. So that was my very long-winded way of saying I forgot to tell you that I could be long-winded, in case you didn't know that already.
You're in good company.
There just comes a point where you say, look, okay, enough is enough. I've reached the point where I don't think I'm going to get any better at this. So let me just get someone else who is better at it and can be more effective at it. And let me focus on the things that I'm more excited about and I can put more energy into and be more successful at completing at an optimal level. And that's different for every person. To the point that you made before, you and I are similar in the way in that we're not trying to force in our books anyone to conclude one thing or another, or necessarily feel the way we feel about whatever the situation is. My goal is to give you the information, offer my experience for context purposes, but then give you the resources that you need to decide for yourself. So for me, with marketing, it just got to a point where, because I wanted to focus on more creative projects, I am going to outsource marketing to something else. For someone else, there may be another reason why they want to outsource or bring on more people. You have to figure that out for yourself, but there's going to come that point, for whatever reason, that you just decide it's time to make that move.
Yeah. And as you're speaking, what comes to me is a quote from my friend Greg Reed, who said, work your strengths, hire your weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
What I'm hearing from you too is sometimes you don't know what those are yet.
Exactly.
Especially when you're an entrepreneur. You kind of fumble around, we figure it out. And I think people look at you at results you might have today, but they didn't see all the fumbling around and bouncing around that it took to figure out what you're good at, what you enjoy doing, and what you don't.
It's constant course correction. I mean, it is a continual journey of course correction. And I think that, I mean, there are a lot of different expressions and quotes out there about the entrepreneurial journey, but just a constant state of course correction, I think, is, you know, encapsulates all of it. You know, and I think even some of the people who we may regard as most successful, the Bezos in the world and the Zuckerbergs in the world, I guarantee you they're course correcting on some level. And I hope to get to that level one day. but and you just have to be agile. You have to be flexible, and you have to understand that it's good to have a goal and it's good to have a vision, but you have to allow some flexibility for things to unfold in a way that may differ from how you envisioned it happening or from the time that you thought it was going to happen. But just trust that things happen as they should. And that's more of a spiritual influence to things. And that goes to one of my other books that I like to read, The Daily Stoic.
I love it. I have the leather bound edition. I love it.
Oh, I didn't realize there was a leather bound
edition. Yeah, it's pretty hot.
But you know, this entrepreneurship journey is really a mental game. It's a game of mental stamina, and that shows up in a lot of different ways, whether it's determining I have to hire someone or it's determining I have to pivot because of a pandemic or whatever the case may be, or it's time for me to bring on some partners, or it's time for me to let go of some partners. You're constantly making decisions. You're constantly course correcting, and you really have to have the headspace and the mindset to be able to thrive in that type of environment.
Yeah, I totally agree that it's adaptability. Mm-hmm. And surrender.
Yeah, I think absolutely.
Surrender has been the biggest lesson in my path for this too, because I'm a visionary. I always have a vision of where I'm going. Where I really fouled up is when I tried to make the how, force the how. Mm-hmm. I was forcing, like, this is how this vision's going to happen. This is going to happen. You know, mm-hmm. I have 26 business failures now that said, and that was the power of the universe or God or whatever it is saying, no, that's not how this is happening.
Right.
My vision for my life is unfolding in my mm-hmm. favor all the time. It just looks a lot different than I thought it would.
Absolutely. And on that same note, you know, being able to detach from things, that's something that I am getting better at, because I was once of the mindset, if A, B, and C are what I need to do to experience D, and I do A, B, and C, then D ought to be guaranteed, right? Well, that's not always the case. So what I am learning to do and have learned to do is that I'm going to do my part. I'm going to do A, B, and C, but after that, I'm just going to have to detach from the outcome, and I just have to continue doing my best and be open to the possibility that D may not be what the universe has for me. Maybe it's D, E, and F or something else. But you just really have to give yourself the space to allow things to unfold in what ultimately is best for you. Maybe not in your timing. Maybe not the way you want it to happen or how it will look, but ultimately what is divine and best for you.
Yeah, what a great point. I want to circle back to a few things. I love the creativity piece that you talked about too, as mm-hmm. an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
I find that my entrepreneur endeavor is like my business is my masterpiece. It's my canvas to express all those different components.
Right.
Is there something that led you or helps you in that realm? Book, course, or someone, a mentor that's helped bring that out of you?
The creative side, you mean?
Yeah.
You know, that's an interesting question. And I think if there was anything, it was maybe interacting with my clients, because in my business model and yours too, I have the luxury of just interacting with so many different people who are in so many different industries, attorneys, finance, government contractors, law enforcement, so many different things. And when I interact with them and I may see some of the different projects that they're involved in, or they may express to me challenges that they're having. And like we were talking about offline, by talking to other people, it sparks something in your mind. It's like, hey, wait a minute. Now I think there may be a solution that I can develop for that. So I would say maybe just the interaction that I have with my clients and prospects and hearing their stories and what their needs are, it kind of just piqued something in me. But secondarily to that, after I wrote the book, which was, I think when I wrote the book, I didn't see that as the start of a creative outlet for me. I just saw this as something that I felt was a gap in the marketplace, because again, I wrote the book in 2018. And I think this is still the case, that there are no books that I'm aware of in the marketplace that talk about service office space from the user's perspective. There are other books out there that I've seen that talk about how you can perhaps start your own service office space business, or how to optimize your service or service office space or co-working business. But I have not yet seen another book that talks about from the user perspective, how do you navigate the marketplace and figure out if this is best for you and how can you optimize it. So when I wrote the book, I was simply trying to fill a gap in the marketplace. I didn't really see myself doing anything creative beyond that. But after writing the book and getting some feedback and just, you know, reading the reviews and getting some more insights from that, I said, wow, well, maybe I can do a course. And maybe I could do some of these other things. So it just kind of snowballs off of itself, if you will. And then it has these tentacles that you can just continue to pursue, and it becomes its own different element of your entrepreneurial journey. So for me, that's how it became a creative endeavor and a creative interest. It started off as, okay, I want to be educational and resourceful. It's like, oh, wait a minute, there's an opportunity to do much more here. So that's what I'm doing.
Have you always been a person that sees opportunities like that?
No, I don't think so. I think since I became an entrepreneur, yes. But when I was in my W-2 good government job life, no, absolutely not. No. Mm-hmm. I think like many people who have 9-to-5 jobs, my goal was just to get to the next promotion within my job description. You know, to get to the next level, you know, in the hierarchy, it, you know, that was the vision that I had. I want to get to the top of the hierarchy. But when I became an entrepreneur, I realized, oh, well, there really isn't a hierarchy, because there's no limit. You know, right. When you have an organizational hierarchy, it stops somewhere. Entrepreneurship is as far as you want to go. Yeah, in my entrepreneurial life, yes, but definitely I don't think so in my former life.
What kind of regrets, if any, do you have shifting from W-2 life to entrepreneurial?
You know, I wouldn't say that I have regrets, because I think everything happens for a reason. I will say that my exit, if you will, out of the corporate world was not voluntary. I'll just leave it there. But I will say that there are many other business owners that I've spoken to who have similar stories, where they were in the corporate world and they were very successful by some measure in the corporate world. Something happened and they decided, or were forced to, pivot to something else. And you know, those people who I speak to, you know, they's like, I'll never go back now that I know that there's more to life than the next rung in the hierarchy. I'll never go back. But even though, you know, my exit from the W-2 world wasn't under ideal circumstances, I wouldn't say that I regret it, because if that hadn't happened, you and I wouldn't be talking right now. I wouldn't have two books. I wouldn't have a business for 9+ years and all of the businesses that I supported. So that unpleasant circumstance ultimately exposed me to so much more that I can pursue and experience in the world. So no regrets whatsoever.
It sounds like, just listening to your story, you're clearly passionate. And I love that you even talk about the businesses that you get to help, being a co-working or a service office space. But you've got to have a clear vision of where you're going or a why. Is that something that you practice on a daily basis to pull you through those challenges?
Yes. And that is something that is an ongoing effort for me. There's an expression that says, when the why is clear, the how is easy. And I am not as clear, believe it or not, on my why as I want to be. You know, I have a general idea of what, you know, when I'm 80 years old, you know, 60 years from now. I had to do the math. Okay. You know, what do I want to say that I did? What do I want the legacy that I've left to be? And that's still evolving for me. That's still coming into focus for me. But it's challenging. It's frustrating, but it's also fun to be on that journey and to design my future, if you will, however I want it to look, and put the effort forth to make that happen. So I'm clearer than I was maybe, you know, 9 years ago or even 5 years ago, but there are still things that are unfolding. And maybe that's a good thing, because I don't want to envision in a limited way. You know, it's good to have this imagination, and it's good to be around people who are doing different things than you are so that you can have a broader perspective. But there are some things that I may not have experienced yet that I don't even know how to imagine yet. So yeah. I'm excited about that part of it. But being on the journey, taking time to just visualize, that's something that I'm working to be more consistent at. And I know you and I are book nerds, but there are a lot of different apps out there that are good for envisioning. There's an app called Envision itself that I really like. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's called Envision. I would definitely consider checking it out. Like many apps, there's a free version as well as a paid version. But that's been very helpful for me. From the envisioning perspective and just getting more clarity about what they call a compelling future and your empowered self. There are two different series that they have on the app. So it's still evolving and it's still ongoing for me. So
I love that you admit that so freely. I think people put so much pressure on themselves to have life all figured out, and nobody ever has life figured out. This is about becoming and becoming. Becoming is a constant process,
right?
And you have to keep becoming. You have to keep growing, because if you're not growing, you're dying.
Exactly. And to me, that goes back to some of the mindset issues that we talked about earlier, and the idea that I'm not trying to, when I wrote my book, I'm not trying to force anything. I'm not trying to force anybody to even use SOS. I even say in my book, you know, it may not be for you. And that's something for you to know, you know, and hopefully by reading my book and engaging in some of the exercises that I have, you now have a concrete reason why it isn't good for you. So instead of going by anecdote or somebody else's story, you now have specific reasons why this is not a solution for you. And that may very well be the case. But so many times people put out things that are not completely true, that are not complete whatsoever. And because people don't always think as critically about things as they should, they may sometimes just go by a person who seems to have it all together. And not considering the fact that that person may be having the same struggles and challenges that you are, they're just not talking about it. Well, I don't want to do that. I have no qualms in saying when I was in the W-2 world that I had no idea really what I wanted to be when I grow up beyond the next rung in the hierarchy. I mean, I have no problem saying that because I think many people feel that way.
Yeah.
And many people don't know there's another way to think.
And that you don't have to have it all figured out.
Exactly.
Sometimes you just gotta
exactly
do it. Let's talk more a little bit about, I want to talk about the service office space a little bit more, but I'm going to save that kind of towards the end. But what we're talking about here is mindset and the vision and all of that stuff that takes work. I think there's sometimes this perspective that people who do all that stuff are born that way or it just comes naturally. But I think you and I both know that's not true. So how do you cultivate your mindset? Do you have a morning success routine that you implement, or what do you do to keep your mind sharp? I know nobody can see it, but she just held up my favorite book of all time, The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. So are you a miracle morninger?
To some extent. I do definitely have a morning routine, and it is derived from what's in The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. His name, for some reason, is a little challenging for me to say, but anyway. So I start every morning typically with I like to meditate. And, you know, I talked about the Envision app, which includes some meditation, but there's also the Calm app, which I tend to use for guided meditation. And some other apps that I like to use, Oprah and Deepak Chopra have partnered on an app. They have 21-day meditations every now and then. So they have some different meditations as well. So I like to start off the day before I even get out of bed, you know, just doing some meditation. I also, while I'm still in bed, because I'm too lazy to get out of bed at this point, is to, you know, I like to do some yoga stretches while I'm in bed, just to kind of loosen up my body a little bit. And then I also read whatever the day's entry is of the Daily Stoic. And then I like to journal on whatever that day's entry is. That's how I kind of warm up my mind, so to speak. And each of the things that I just mentioned are part of the Savers routine that's in The Miracle Morning, just not necessarily in that order. Yeah. But I'm touching on the silence, the affirmations, the visualization, the reading, and the scribing. But again, I'm doing it in a way that feels good for me. And that goes back to the idea of people understanding that the way someone else tells you to do something, it may not necessarily flow that way for you.
Yeah.
So for me, I start maybe with scribing and reading, and then I end with visualization or whatever the case may be. But that's typically what my morning routine looks like. Now, I will say that, you know, it changes with the time of year. Here we have daylight savings time. I don't think you all do.
Tell everybody where you're at.
I'm in Maryland outside of the Washington, D.C. area. So during the spring and summer months where the sun tends to wake me up, the natural light wakes me up, I'm a little bit more energized. So I might exercise, you know, immediately after getting out of bed just because my energy level is different. Now for me, it's dark when my body naturally wakes up. So I'm not really looking to get out of bed or go downstairs to the treadmill. So what feels better for me energetically is just to meditate first thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm allowing myself that flexibility to switch up my routine based on what my energy level is and not feeling like I have to do it this way each and every day. But that aside, that gives me the kickstart that I need to get going for the day.
I love that. I love the message through this theme through what you're talking about today is about adaptability.
Exactly.
And you've said it a couple times, space. I like to say space and grace. You give yourself space and grace to adapt, to mess up every now and then, and to figure it out as you go.
And you know, we're humans. We're dynamic people. And sometimes we just feel different. And it's okay to honor that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, I want to get into your favorite affirmation, but that just sparked a question.
Okay.
Have you ever in your business, have you ever had a business fail or an idea fail?
I guess that depends on how you define failure.
Yeah.
If you define failure as I didn't make any sales, or I didn't have as many people who show up to my event as I had planned. Absolutely. Yeah, I've definitely failed in that regard. I've definitely, instead of saying failing, I'll say there have been many times when I've had a target and I didn't meet the target. But I learned something from that. And sometimes learning means, okay, let's course correct and do it, try it again, but do it differently. Or it may mean, you know what, now is not the time for me to take this on, or you know what, maybe this isn't the priority that I thought it was, or maybe this is something that I can just outsource to someone else. But there have been definitely plenty of times when I did not meet the expectations that I had set for myself or I had set for the project. But out of that, I learned something.
The way that you handle that sounds so easy. You know, you just had a result, you evaluated it, you made it mean that you can fix something. Tell me about, is there an emotional impact for you? Do you have an inner critic that's as bitchy as mine that kind of shreds you down a little bit, or have you reined that in?
Well, I would say, yes, I do. But I think I do have that, my inner voice is probably bitchier than yours is. In fact, I bet my bitchy voice can beat your bitchy voice any day, you know.
Bring it on, LD.
Coming on, Bill. my inner voice is bitchier than yours. So yes, I definitely have that negative self talk. I definitely have that self doubt. I definitely have that. What the heck am I doing? You know, why am I waking up each day to something that, you know, I've already decided for myself I'm going to have a bad day when I get out of the bed. So I'm setting the tone. So I definitely have that. But what has helped me to manage through that and get over that, or continue to try to get over that, is meditation. It's reading books like The Daily Stoic, doing yoga practice, and really just taking care of my headspace. That's most important, and that's where I put a lot of my time and energy, because we're all our, you know, our worst enemy in many respects, and that inner self-talk is very powerful, and it's very influential. And what I've learned through meditation is that simply being aware of the fact that you're having this negative self-talk goes a long way towards overcoming it and defeating it. So what I've learned to do through those different practices is when I find myself being in a negative self-talk space, acknowledging that I'm in that space right now, and I don't necessarily have to try to resist it or overcome it in that moment, but just acknowledging, okay, I'm talking negatively right now, I'm thinking negatively right now, is enough to begin to slightly shift myself away from that.
I love that. I do the same thing. I can just tell it sneaks up on you sometimes.
It does.
And I'll just say, you know what? Don't make any major life decisions right now.
Exactly.
You probably shouldn't talk to anybody right now.
Exactly. And you know, there's something that I call the pit. Now, we women tend to have more different emotional valleys that we go through for different reasons. But you know, when I'm in that space, or when I've been in that space, that I like to call the pit, you know, when you're just really in a really dark space for whatever reason. It could be because something, you know, you just lost a loved one, or you just got a bad news or something. And it's perfectly human to get to that space. We are emotional people, and it's perfectly normal to have different emotions. The key is not to stay there. The key is not to get stuck there. But when I found myself in a place where I was stuck in the pit. Like you just said, I came to learn, okay, don't make any decisions right now. Don't do anything right now. Don't make a, there's an expression that I've heard, don't make a permanent decision based on a temporary circumstance. So once I was in that state or found myself in that state a number of times, I began to understand, okay, this is the space I'm in right now. Let me just chill. Let me do something that I know is going to help to get me out of it. And it's important to really know yourself in that way. Again, going back to the mental headspace and the mental self-care, know who you are, know how you are, and know what works for you. For me, it's meditation. I love natural light. I'm one of those types of people. My mood changes when the weather's overcast and rainy. And I know that about myself. But you really just have to have that awareness and find ways that work for you to confront it when it happens.
Do you have any favorite exercises for self-awareness, or have you done the DISC assessment or Enneagram or Myers-Briggs, or is there a favorite book or something that helps you get to know yourself more, or is it simply being present and aware?
If I were to put it on one thing, I would think it would be meditation. There are a number of different books that I've used. You know, The Daily Stoic is one of them, because that's a good book for really challenging your own way of thinking and looking at things. There's so much noise in the world, you know, with social media, with the news, and with whatever else you may be influenced by. Sometimes it's hard to know what to pay attention to and what to react to and what to respond to. But when I read books like The Daily Stoic, it really allows me to quiet my mind and to focus my attention on things that matter the most. So The Daily Stoic is definitely one. Again, the different meditation and Envision apps that I mentioned, that's what works best for me. And included in that, when I find myself being stressed about something or maybe in a dark mood about something, there are certain breathing techniques that help me to, you know, kind of center myself a little bit. There are also some yoga postures that I practice that help me to center myself a little bit, too. So I use kind of a composite of different types of things.
What kind of breath exercises do you use?
Well, what I would say, there are technical terms for some of these breaths, but just to simplify, one is diaphragmic, if I'm probably saying that incorrectly, but breathing from your diaphragm. So when you're taking a deep inhale, allow your belly to inflate, you know, and then allow your exhale to be the same count or maybe a longer count than your inhale. So if your inhale is a 4-count breath, allow your exhale to be a 4-count breath or maybe even longer. And that will allow you to allow your brain to calm a little bit. So I find that technique to be effective. There's also a rapid breathing technique, which is difficult to explain, but I'm happy to share some information with you if you want to get out to your users. But yeah, there are a lot of different types of breathing techniques. You can probably find them on YouTube or Google, but they actually do have an impact on your brain and your mood and affect at a certain time.
Yeah, they sure do. I love that you even talk about that because, you know, I used to be one of those eye rollers when I would hear this. I'm like, oh gosh, here we go. But, I'll try anything once at least, right? But Brendan Burchard really altered my thinking on breathing.
Okay.
And so whenever I'm stressed out or I'm in the car or I need to calm myself or center myself before a podcast or before a loan signing appointment, I'll start taking 10 breaths. Sometimes I'll even forget what I might have been upset about or what was bothering me or the anxiety I was feeling. By the time you get to 10 breaths, it's a whole new world.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you kind of realize, what is it that I'm so upset about? Because what I've learned and what I continue to learn is that a lot of the things that I used to be upset about really didn't warrant me being upset about it. Because one, what is being upset going to do? And then two, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen if this thing turns out to be as bad as I think it's going to be? You know, one of the things that I used to say to myself in my W-2 world, it was a somewhat of a high pressure job sometimes when it came down to budget decisions and things having to get done so they don't get on the front news or the Washington Post or what have you. And I would say, you know, if I do something wrong, if I put in a wrong budget number or something like that, no one's going to die, right? What's the worst that's going to happen? You know, maybe my career is dead, but no person is, and I'll find something else. So I think, you know, doing these types of things allow us to keep things in proper perspective. And just, again, going back to being flexible and adaptable, if circumstances do turn out to be unfavorable, then adjust and keep moving. What else are you going to do otherwise?
Exactly. What else are you going to
do? What else are you going to do? You know?
Do you have a favorite affirmation? And if so, how do you use it?
I do have a favorite affirmation.
All right.
And I actually wrote it in
my
second book, Kill the Rent, Grow Your Biz After COVID-19. And it's actually one by Napoleon Hill. And I actually have this on my website, too. And it goes, in every adversity lies the seed of an equal or greater benefit. And that is so true for me. And we've touched on it already when we've talked about times when we failed or maybe didn't meet the expectations that we set for ourselves. Yes, there might have been an adversity or an unpleasant experience, but out of that we gained wisdom. Out of that we gained knowledge that we applied to something better than what we probably were thinking in the beginning. And you know, when you look at how I was thrust into entrepreneurship, the fact that I was in a W-2 world, was forced out of it for whatever reason. Out of that adversity came now a nearly 10-year-old business that I've owned and operated, came 2 best-selling books, came meeting fabulous people like Bill Soroka and so many others. And these are things that I probably would not have even imagined before. So for me, adversity just opened up an entire new dimension to living and experiencing. So I would definitely say I'm a living example of that quote. And that's one of the most powerful that I've come across in my life.
I love that and can relate to that so well as well. Let's talk a little bit more about your business that's almost 10 years old, your service office space business. Now, I know we've got 2 great books, the one that was published before COVID and then the after COVID. That's right. For the user perspective on deciding or even how to decide.
Right.
Whether service office space or co-working space would work well for them.
Right.
I know a lot of our listeners are looking for opportunities of various levels. Sometimes they want one of those big deals, and I would consider a business like yours a big deal. So can we talk a little bit about what it's like to own service office space?
Well, for me, it's fun. Like any business adventure, it has its challenges and its nuances. But for me, it's really fun because I enjoy supporting other business owners. My heart is warmed when I see that the idea of having a professional place to meet, a professional address to use, is the difference between whether a person can close a deal or not. I actually had a client come to me yesterday, very late in the day, saying, look, I need a place to meet for just a week, because I have this going on and I don't want to meet at these people's house and I don't want them to meet at mine. And you know, is there anything you can do to help? And even though I typically don't offer services on a weekly basis, we figured something out that worked out for the both of us. And I was able to help that person meet whatever their goal is for the upcoming week. That gives me a lot of pride and a lot of joy. So overall, I enjoy being a provider of service office space. I love supporting other businesses. I love seeing them grow. I love seeing their chest stick out a little bit more because, you know, their guests are impressed that they're in such a lovely place. And of course, the goal is for every one of my clients to feel like it is their space and for their guests to feel like it's their space. And that changes the mentality as well, too. You take a little bit more pride in yourself when your surroundings are nice and are at a level that make you feel good and proud about what you do. So overall, I think it's wonderful.
What advice would you have for somebody who's maybe just now thinking of looking for space to start their own co-working?
To start their own business, to become a provider themselves?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I would suggest is to consider who you want your market to be, because there are so many different options out there. There are providers like myself that serve business owners just in a general sense, but there are other niche-based providers that serve only attorneys, for example, or that may serve only creatives, or there are some that are only for women, for example, because women, you know, have unique challenges when it comes to having the capital to get their own space. So I would think, be very clear about who your market is going to be, if you're going to serve, you know, entrepreneurs and those in need in general, or if you want to have a niche market. And then the next thing I would suggest is to get a broker, a real estate broker, to help you find a space, because ultimately your success is going to have a lot to do with how good of a deal you have with the space in terms of the rent that you're paying. Because as I talk about in my book, rent can kill a small business. Aside from payroll, rent or mortgage is the number one line item in terms of cost that a business pays. And if you can't manage that, then you're not going to manage any other part of your business well. So having someone who can help you secure a good deal on your real estate, I think, will be step two. And then from there, it's really just a matter of running your business efficiently, doing the marketing, doing the sales efforts, making sure that you price your product well. I mean, doing anything else you would do with a business, a SWOT analysis, a business plan, those types of things. But the first two steps, again, figure out who you want to serve and then get a broker, a commercial real estate broker. And let me be very clear about this here. I'm a commercial real estate agent. I've been licensed in the state of Maryland since 2016, and I decided to do that as an outgrowth of the business that I started in 2012. But it's important, I believe, to get a broker who focuses on commercial real estate. There are a lot of residential agents out there who try to do commercial deals, and they probably could muddle through, but get someone who is specialized and knowledgeable about the commercial real estate landscape, because that's different than residential.
Excellent advice. Yeah. So along that same thread, aside from what you just mentioned, because you've been in the business for almost 10 years now, you've probably seen some companies come and go. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest mistake or the pitfall that new SOS owners make?
Probably maybe not pricing their product in a way that serves the market that they're trying to reach, because you have some providers out there that are selling their services really below the market, and they're attracting a different type of element. And then you have some that might be pricing a little bit too high for the market that they're in. So I think it really comes down to pricing your product well. And again, this goes back to having a good real estate deal too, because if your rent is astronomical, there's really nothing that you're going to be able to do from a pricing perspective. That also speaks to, again, who it is that you want to serve, because one of the things I learned very early in my entrepreneurial career when I was working with a business coach is you don't sell on price, you sell on service. So I'm not saying that you should be the cheapest act in town or that you should undercut any competitors that might be in the area. I don't agree with that at all. But I think be aware of your market, be aware of who you're likely to attract in that market, and make sure that your real estate deal is such that you can price your product in a way that is affordable for your market and you can still make a profit.
Great advice. And I have one more question for you. Just on the commercial real estate landscape, I really kind of expected commercial real estate to be cheaper or less expensive or easier to negotiate than it actually is right now. Like, it's still kind of booming even after the pandemic. What's your forecast on commercial real estate? Does a business like this make sense to fill in some of the gaps we might be seeing in the retail sector?
I think it absolutely is. The pandemic had a counterintuitive effect on many different industries, and real estate was one of them. And some of that, I think, is because out of the pandemic, a lot of entrepreneurs were born because they lost their job or they needed to fill a gap in their income. So they created side hustles that maybe have turned into main hustles. So a lot of entrepreneurs are out there now because of the pandemic, and they're looking for office space. And for those providers, like some of the big landlords out there, you know, they may have a lot of vacancy right now. So some of the landlords or building owners themselves are now turning some of their vacant spaces into fractional workspaces, like what those in my industry do. So to accommodate those that may be looking for smaller spaces, instead of, you know, 10,000 square foot plates in a building, they just need, you know, maybe a 1,000 square foot suite. So there are definitely opportunities out there. And I would say that if there's anyone listening who's looking to start a service office space business, you know, look in your area to see if there's any office buildings that have high vacancy, because that might be an opportunity for you to fill in that gap for that landlord or building owner.
Awesome. Yep. LD, thank you so much. I feel like I could probably talk to you for a couple more hours, but we better let people go. We've been on for about an hour, and this has just been delightful. Thank you so much for carving some time out for us.
My pleasure. This has been a lot of fun, and I'm just so excited for you and this podcast, and much continued success to you.
Thank you so much. And if you're listening and you'd like to connect with LD and check out her book, Kill the Rent, Grow Your Biz, both versions, I'll have those links inside the VIP room of the Side Hustle Lounge. So visit sidehustlelounge.com/VIP. Thank you so much for listening to the Side Hustle Lounge podcast. You know, if you follow me on Instagram and social media, you already know that my pets play a huge role in my life, and I include them as part of the family. They are part of my why. Dexter and Violet bring so much joy and love into my life that I always want to make sure that they are well tended to and healthy. That's where my Toto pet insurance policy comes in. Toto was voted best pet insurance company in 2021 by Forbes Advisor, and it's known as the pet insurance company with a heart and without the gotchas. There's no network of obscure vets that I'm forced to choose from, so I get to pick my pet's doctor. And then, depending on the policy I select, I can be reimbursed up to 90% of the vet bill. And they make it easy to use. You visit any vet, you submit a claim, you get cash back. It's pet insurance finally done right. If you'd like to support the show, get coverage for your own fur babies, and maybe even give yourself some peace of mind at the same time, get an instant quote today on Toto's easy-to-use website at sidehustlelounge.com/Toto. That's T-O-T-O.